Hello, and welcome to our program, Travel, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Matthew Thompson, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from USA Today and AAA Magazine here on OWL Radio. Along for the ride in Bogota's extraordinary ciclovia, by Jim Benning. You could hear the sounds of cyclists everywhere, the whir of tires against pavement, the clanking of gears and chains, the measured breathing of countless Colombians working their way across the sprawling capital more than 8,600 feet up in the Andes Mountains. My breathing? Not so measured. I had arrived in Bogota a day earlier and was still acclimating to the thin air as I joined hundreds of others pedaling down El Dorado Avenue. I had timed my arrival in Colombia to ride in the city's ciclovia, literally cycleway. Held every Sunday and on holidays, the event closes a whopping 80 miles of city streets to automobiles from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. so that cyclists, pedestrians, runners, and skaters can take over the roads. But as I was discovering, ciclovia is more than just an opportunity for locals to get some exercise. Many cities around the world, including Los Angeles, now host periodic open street events, but Bogota's ciclovia, which started in 1974, was arguably the first and is unquestionably the biggest. In fact, an estimated 1 million-plus Bogotanos take to the city streets on any given Sunday, making this ciclovia, in terms of participants, conceivably the largest regularly scheduled recreation event on the planet. Outsiders might be more likely to associate Colombia with violence and cocaine than with cycling and civic activities. After all, for more than six decades, armed guerrillas, paramilitary troops, and drug cartels wreaked havoc on the country, killing hundreds of thousands of people and displacing millions more. Those were very sad times, Bogota native and avid cyclist Carlos Candela said as we rode in the ciclovia. We had bombings, kidnappings. Our country was going nowhere. Nobody wanted to come to Colombia, but that is the past. Indeed, since the landmark 2016 peace agreement between the government and the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, violence in Colombia has lessened considerably. Yet crime and insurgent activities persist, and in May, the U.S. State Department again advised Americans to reconsider traveling to the country. Still, Colombia has given the world the magical realism of Gabriel Garcia Marquez and the hip-shaking hits of Shakira and J Balvin. The country is among the world's most biodiverse, with more bird species than any other nation. Its coffee-growing highlands and spindly wax palms inspired Disney's 2021 animated movie, Encanto. And the food scene? Hotter than ever. For all these reasons and more, travelers have been flocking to Colombia, to the Caribbean coast, home to fabled Cartagena, to Medellin, which draws an international crowd of remote workers, and to misty, massive Bogota, which Time magazine named one of the world's greatest places of 2022, citing the city's culinary scene and sustainability efforts, including local bike share programs, and the 52 miles of new bike paths added during the pandemic. Spread out across more than 600 square miles, Bogota is South America's fourth most populous city, with nearly 8 million residents. Like so many capitals, Bogota is not immune to poverty, air pollution, or traffic, but the city's commitment to cycling is undoubtedly world-class. In fact, in 2019, Bogota ranked 12th in the world on the Copenhagenize Index of bike-friendly cities. European municipalities dominated the list, and Bogota was the only Latin American city to land a spot on the index. We're very proud of that, said Candela, who worked with the city's tourism office at the time of my visit. Bogota's nearly 400 miles of dedicated bike paths, or ciclorutas, were a factor. So too, of course, was Ciclovia. Eager to experience the event, I set out by bike on a cool Sunday morning late last year with Candela and Felipe Camelo, one of Ciclovia's many, many uniformed guardians, safety officers who patrol the route and assist participants who need help. We rode through light traffic to El Dorado Avenue, where a barrier blocked automobiles and a bright yellow Ciclovia sign indicated we were entering a car-free zone. Then we joined hundreds of cyclists streaming down the wide open street. We soon spotted a group of dancers, incredibly members of the National Police Force. As thumping music played, about a dozen officers in green uniforms and baseball caps waved their arms and spun in unison. "That is a typical dance from the Caribbean," Candela said with a smile. "It is an activity to get closer to the community." Passing cyclists nodded approvingly, and several onlookers could not resist dancing too. Nearby, a sculpture of a plump horseman looked on, the work of famed Colombian artist Fernando Botero. I could not help but smile. We pedaled on toward the city center, passing office buildings and bright murals, until we reached Parque del Centenario, or Centenario, home to sports fields, a planetarium, and even a former bullring. We stopped here for a break. "Can I get you a coffee?" Candela asked. I was not about to refuse a cup of Colombia's rich coffee. As we sipped our drinks, I chatted with a couple of young cyclists who were relaxing on a bench. "We ride all the time," said Edir Lopez, who had pedaled here from his home miles away. "We love the open streets and seeing all the people out with kids and dogs." Indeed, all around us, cyclists cruised past, parents pushed strollers, and as if on cue, a couple walked a puppy. The sun broke through the clouds. We resumed our ride, turning down 7th Street, which was also closed to cars. Heading toward the upscale neighborhood of Chapinero, we weaved past runners and then stopped to chat with a dozen cyclists in matching lion jerseys. Members of the Los Leones Club, they had just finished climbing Alto de Patios, a 4-mile hill beloved by serious riders. I could have imagined the lions feeling exhausted, but they were exuberant, seemingly fueled by the festive vibes. We rode on and paused at one of the many stands selling salpicón de frutas, a cool, refreshing Colombian fruit cocktail. Nearby, an aerobics class was underway, one of more than a dozen activities along the route. We had been out for hours by now and had seen thousands of people from all walks of life enjoying the open streets. I was beginning to grasp the expansive scope of this Ciclovia, and honestly, I was blown away. Do you realize up to 2 million people are out on the streets in a country like this that is famous for violence? My lunch companion said with a wry grin a few days later. It is amazing. I had sat down with Jaime Ortiz Mariño, the urban planner, architect, and Bogota native, credited with creating the city's first Ciclovia in December 1974. Although he had long since turned over the event's operations to others, Ortiz Mariño remained in awe of its enduring success. I asked how the idea had come to him, and he recalled studying at Cleveland, Ohio's Case Western Reserve University in the late 1960s, as the Vietnam War protests and the civil rights movement roiled the United States. "I had two types of education," Ortiz Mariño said, "one in school and the other in the streets." He returned to Bogota as many Colombians were leaving the countryside for fast-growing urban centers. He did not like everything that he saw. "We were developing our cities in the image of American cities," he said, "with a car at the center." Ortiz Mariño was not opposed to automobiles, but he wanted to promote other modes of transit, especially widely available bicycles. Inspired by his experience of the counterculture in the U.S., he and a few others organized the first mass bike ride, a peaceful demonstration of sorts on streets temporarily closed to cars. To minimize opposition, they planned it for a Sunday when fewer automobiles would be on Bogota's roads. At the time, it was a radical idea. Ortiz Mourinho was teaching at a couple of Bogota universities, and he recalled contemporaries thinking he was nuts. They were saying, "This ridiculous guy that we send to the United States to study comes back talking about bicycles when the world belongs to the car?" And yet, roughly 6,000 people turned out. The event was a smashing success. And looking back, no one should have been surprised. At least, that was my thought as I strolled into Muvel, a three-story temple to Colombia's love affair with cycling. Set among the posh hotels and restaurants of Chapinero, the elegant store operates as a combination bike shop, cafe, bookstore, art gallery, and museum. Archival photos, framed articles, and colorful cycling jerseys decorate its walls. The shop also stocks dozens of hard-to-find books on cycling, and one floor is lined with iconic bicycles. "I wanted to create a place that would value the cultural aspects of cycling in Colombia," explained owner Ricardo Montezuma, an author, cycling expert, and professor of urbanism and planning at the National University of Colombia. Among the many books he has written is Citizens, Streets and Cities, A History and Celebration of Ciclovia in Colombia and Beyond. Montezuma led me through the store, pointing out historical artifacts, including a framed 1980s-era Café de Colombia jersey from the country's first national cycling team. "Those were marvelous times when the team really represented in Europe," he said. Over coffee, he traced cycling's rise in Colombia to the 1950s, when competitive cycling took off. The first major race, the 1951 Vuelta a Colombia, or Tour of Colombia, linked once isolated areas in the mountainous nation, drawing crowds and sparking the public's imagination. Cycling remains one of Colombia's most popular sports, and fans still obsessively follow the country's elite riders in the Tour de France and other top races. In a country beset by poverty, cycling remains accessible to nearly anyone. Bicycles outnumber cars. Perhaps that is why Ciclovia is beloved by so many in Bogota, not least Montezuma. "For me," he said, lowering his voice as though sharing a secret, "Ciclovia is something very beautiful. It is the only place where all of Bogota society crosses paths. Poor people, the middle class, the wealthy. It's very democratic." That, I realized, helped explain the joy I felt when I rode in Bogota's Ciclovia. Everyone, it seemed, was outside, sharing the roads and enjoying this unlikely cycling haven up in the Andes. If you go, anyone can participate in Bogota's Ciclovia. It takes place from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sundays and holidays. The route runs through the city center, but also includes many outlying communities. Bike rentals are easy to find. You can also simply walk or run along the route. Open street events in Southern California. While Southern California doesn't have a Ciclovia that rivals Bogota's in size and scope, a number of communities host periodic open street events, which temporarily turn roadways over to cyclists, skaters, pedestrians, and others. Among them are San Diego, Encinitas, the San Gabriel Valley, and Los Angeles. In fact, with 9 events planned annually, Los Angeles's Ciclavia, a play on Ciclovia, bills itself as the country's largest open streets program. Ciclavia organizers took their inspiration from Bogota. SoCal native and urban anthropologist Adonia Lugo traveled there in 2008 and met with Jaime Ortiz Mourinho, who shared his belief that these family-friendly events change participants' attitudes toward their city. The following year, Lugo and other activists got a little help from Copenhagen, Denmark, where then Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa found himself for the United Nations Climate Change Conference. As he and Deputy Mayor Romo Pasquale drove through the town, they spotted cyclists riding in the snow. Villaraigosa was quite moved, Pasquale recalls. He turned to me and said, "Where's my Ciclovia?" At that moment, it was full speed ahead. The first Ciclovia took place in downtown L.A. in 2010 and drew tens of thousands of participants. Organizers were thrilled. "It reinforced this belief that I had in L.A. that anything is possible," says Pasquale, who's now executive director of the nonprofit Ciclovia. "There is one common denominator. Where you live, how much money you make, and the color of your skin, none of that mattered. It was that sense of belonging, of experiencing the same thing the same way. I can attest to that. Unlike Bogota's Ciclovia, which has a fixed route, each Ciclovia event is held in a different neighborhood. Among my favorite memories, joining others making their way between Boyle Heights and the Arts District on the new 6th Street Viaduct late last year. It felt like a giant street party, LA at its best. The next Ciclovia event will take place in Lamert Park in historic South Central on December 3rd. Pasquale is looking forward to it and to growing Ciclovia in the coming years. Not so remote after all. Record number of tourists are flocking to this tropical country by Kathleen Wong. With over 1,000 coral islands, the world's only underwater restaurant, and idyllic beaches that inspire desktop backgrounds, the Maldives has many reasons to attract tourists. And they, indeed, made that trek. Last year, a record number of tourists visited the Indian Ocean country. With over 1,000 resorts, the Maldives experienced a 12% increase in tourist arrivals last year compared to 2022, the most ever for the atoll nation, totaling over 1.88 million tourists. In 2022, the island nation saw 1.67 million arrivals. The most arrivals came from India, Russia, China, the United Kingdom, and Germany, according to data from the Ministry of Tourism. For the island nation, tourism is more than just welcoming new visitors. Tourism is the Maldives' strongest economic driver, making up 58.3% of its total economy in 2022, according to the World Travel and Tourism Council. Over 70% of jobs in the Maldives are in the tourism industry. The warm weather country targeted 1.8 million tourists for 2023, and hit that number on December 20th, according to a press release by the Maldives Marketing and Public Relations Corporation. The country even celebrated with a special ceremony for the Dutch tourist who was the 1.8 millionth customer. "We are immensely proud of this achievement and remain committed to reaching the targets set for our tourism industry for next year as well," said Fathmath Thalfik, CEO and Managing Director of MMPRC, in a statement in December. "Every visitor who arrives in the Maldives has their breath taken away by the natural beauty of our nation, the warm hospitality of our people, and the unmatched variety of places to stay and things to do." The Maldives aims to have even more tourists arrive this year, and its January arrival numbers are already surpassing the past 2 years. As of January 3rd, 17,441 travelers entered the country's borders, compared to 17,346 in 2023 and 15,618 in 2022. Kobuk Valley National Park is among America's least visited. Here's why it's worth going, by Eve Chen. Kobuk Valley National Park does not get many tourists. The park saw just under 17,000 recreational visits in 2022, but that doesn't mean it's any less worthy of a trip. Kobuk Valley is one of the most unique and least visited national parks in the entire system, said Peter Christian, chief spokesperson for public affairs for the National Park Service's Alaska region. It's hard to get to because it is so remote, but once you do, the reward is sand dunes and snow-capped peaks, and if you're lucky, thousands of caribou. He said that the park also protects the traditional way of living for Alaska Natives whose ancestors have lived on the land since time immemorial. Here's what travelers should know about Kobuk Valley, the latest national park in USA Today's year-long series. What is Kobuk Valley National Park famous for? Kobuk Valley is known for its striking sand dunes. Sand dunes in the Arctic landscape are not what you would expect. Since most people associate sand dunes with a hot desert environment, it is a visually unusual thing to see, said Christian, who worked at Kobuk Valley for 4 years. In fact, what most people don't realize is that the Arctic is also a desert, with very low levels of rainfall. The park's sand dunes date back to the Ice Age. Over time, the slow, grinding advance and retreat of the glaciers ground the rocks beneath them into a fine sand, which was blown by the wind into the sheltered, ice-free Kobuk Valley, explains the park's website, which notes that the park's Great Kobuk Sand Dunes are the largest active, high-latitude dune field on Earth. The park is also widely associated with caribou, which migrate through the park in the spring and the fall. The spectacle of tens of thousands of caribou crossing the Kobuk River is unparalleled, Christian said. How big is Kobuk Valley? Kobuk Valley National Park spans 1.75 million acres of northwest Alaska. Can you visit Kobuk Valley National Park? Yes. Kobuk Valley is open all year round. Joe Dalamole, district ranger for Western Arctic National Parklands, said that the vast majority of visitors are local, native residents who highly rely on the park's protected resources for subsistence activities, such as hunting, fishing, berry picking, and wood gathering, much like they have for thousands of years. Who are the native people of Kobuk Valley? The park lies within the traditional homelands of the Inupiat people, who still live in the area. Part of the motive for Congress to establish the park, which is still true today, is its rich cultural and archaeological history dating to around 10,000 years ago by the ancestors of the Inupiat people, Dalamole said. What does Kobuk mean? Kobuk is an Inupiat Eskimo word meaning big river, according to the park's website, which also notes that the past spellings have included Kowak, Kowuk, Kubuk, Kuwak, Kuwak, Kopak, Kubuk, and Kubuk. How much does it cost for one vehicle to enter Kobuk Valley National Park? Kobuk Valley National Park is free to enter, but forget about driving. As there are no roads, visitation to the park requires some planning, and transportation is conducted via bush plane, boat, snowmobile, and dog sled, Dalamole said. Most visitors are local area subsistence users, with a much smaller portion of tourists that fly to the sand dunes to hike, camp, or just take photos in the summer, and others that may float in the Kobuk River and its tributaries. World-class guided fishing also attracts a small number of visitors in the summer. Travelers can take an authorized air taxi from Anchorage or Fairbanks to the park. What animals live in Kobuk Valley? Kobuk Valley is home to a wide array of wildlife. In addition to caribou, the park's many mammal species include moose, gray wolves, brown bears, wolverines, Arctic foxes, snowshoe hares, and muskox, which are native to Alaska. There are also all kinds of migratory birds and fish. Kings Canyon National Park in California brings you to the Feet of Giants by Eve Chen. Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Parks are often spoken of in the same breath They even share the same website. They are two national parks, but they are managed as one by one staff, said Cynthia Kawasaki-Yi, Chief of Communications and Management Support for both parks in California. Sequoia actually gets more visitors, more than 1.15 million in 2022, compared to just under 641,000 at Kings Canyon, according to National Park Service records. But each park deserves exploring on its own. Kings Canyon alone spans 722 square miles of massive trees and staggering mountains. Driving down through Kings Canyon itself is just a magical experience, views that you would not get elsewhere, said Kawasaki-Yi. Here's what travelers should know about Kings Canyon, the latest national park in USA Today's year-long series. What is special about Kings Canyon National Park? Like its neighbor, Kings Canyon is home to some of the tallest and oldest trees in the world, giant sequoias. The world's second largest tree, the General Grant Tree, stretches 268 feet up in the park's Grant Grove. It is also the only living shrine to the men and women who have died in service to their country, and it is also the nation's Christmas tree, said Kawasaki-Yi. How far apart are Sequoia and Kings Canyon? Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Parks are right next door to each other in the Sequoia National Forest. We're very intertwined, said Kawasaki-Yi, so you get kind of a double experience in that. Can you drive through Kings Canyon National Park? Yes. Visitors can drive through Kings Canyon to Sequoia on Generals Highway. If you're coming out from LA, you would go into Sequoia National Park, drive through both parks, and come out toward Fresno, the closest major city to Kings Canyon, said Kawasaki-Yi. She said that the whole drive typically takes between an hour and a half to 2 hours, not including Cedar Grove, which is more remote. One flat vehicle entrance fee of $35 covers access to both national parks for 7 days. No reservations are required for entry to either. What is the best time of year to visit Kings Canyon? Kawasaki-Yi recommends visiting in the spring or fall, but she prefers springtime for waterfall viewing. You get the really strong waterfalls with the snowmelt, she said. Visitors who want to check if Cedar Grove is open for the season during their visit. Visitors will want to check if Cedar Grove is open for the season during their visit, as the road to that closes for the winter. In addition to being a popular access point for wilderness exploration, Kawasaki-Yi said Cedar Grove's views are unmatched. When you look up on both sides, you just see Granite Canyon, she said. Who are the indigenous people of the area? Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks are the homelands of the Mono or Monash, Yokuts, Tubbatulabal, Paiute, and Western Shoshone, according to the park's website, which lists other affiliated federally recognized tribes. You have been listening to Travel here on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Matthew Thompson saying goodbye from Owl Radio.